This is an interview with Ezra German on Monday, the 17th of August, for the Imperial War Museum Holocaust exhibition. So Ezra, if you could start by telling us what life was like for you as a child before the war.
Pirna, like so many German towns, especially those along the Rhine, is very romantically situated. It is by the banks of the Elbe River. It is of some age. It's got a fortress castle up top, which was later unused for experiments in the euthanasia program. It has wood around it. It has the Elbsandsteingebirge, mountains, well, not mountains, but hills, shall we say, this side of the vegetation barrier, alongside the river. In winter, the river either freezes over, or at least the banks are solidly frozen for some distance into the river, and the kids go skating. Children go skiing in the winter. It's the natural thing to do. You don't have to have skis. A couple of barrel boards strapped to your feet will also do, if your father hasn't got enough money to buy you a pair of skis. In the summer, we can roam the hills, the woods. The weather is usually good. We are not far from the Czech border, but of course as children we didn't venture into Czechoslovakia, although my father frequently, or more frequently than normal, took us across the border in the latter part of the Hitler years simply to get out of Hitler Germany for a while. This would have been, of course, before the annexation of Czechoslovakia. Our life as children, my brother and I, was untroubled. As long as I can remember, I have always been aware that we were somehow different from the other children, not because we saw ourselves as such, but because the other children did. Some more so, some less. In what that difference consisted, I never knew. I didn't think about it. I was a child. But I am very much aware that I was aware of it. Other than that, as I say, our days were quite untroubled. We went to the Volksschule, the ordinary primary school. There was no Jewish community in Pirna. And as far as I know, certainly as far as I knew then, the only Jewish children in the town were two girls and my brother and myself. My brother, being 2.5 years older than me, didn't have a vast amount to do with me, because at that age, when the one is six and the other 3.5, it's an enormous difference. He was very much the older brother. But I had pals of my own, one of whom at least I'm still in touch with today. Those were the untroubled years. But, of course, little by little, I would say imperceptibly, the pressures grew. And once again, I cannot say exactly what they consisted of. I remember one or two incidents, such as that a Gestapo plainclothesman came to our flat to look for arms, weapons. It was a bit of chicanery that the Nazis were fond of. I don't remember when that was, but it must have been fairly late in the day, round about 38. Before that, well, there was always the background. In the background was always the feeling that any bystander, anyone, in the street, any school pal, and any teacher could call you the Jew in one form or another at any moment. They usually didn't, but one knew that this was a distinct possibility, and more than that, under certain circumstances, such as if one behaved quite normally out of turn, as a school child might, as a wayward child might, then it would become a certainty that sooner or later they would come up with it. On one occasion when I had annoyed my teacher, for instance, I had made a gesture with my hand, meaning nothing, a totally meaningless gesture. I went like this, indicating a measure, I forget what. He told me to stop it, and I did it once more, whereupon he let me have it, right, left, and center. And by the time he'd finished, he said, "I don't know why I bother with you at all." And everybody knew precisely what he meant.
Tell me a little bit about your mother and your father,
Edward. My father was a shopkeeper. He ran, for those days, a fairly large shop selling clothes, fashions, and sports equipment. Skis, among other things. He had quite a large department dealing in skis. And my mother worked with him in the shop. She was a very clever needlewoman. She looked after the alterations if some customer needed something altered. My mother was a woman of intellectual or pursuits. She had been to university in Warsaw. She read French and German literature, whereas my father was much more interested in the Bible and in Hebrew writings. But not exclusively, but more so. My mother was a woman of... When I go to Perna now recently, and people who knew her from Dresden tell me that she was a very good-looking woman, and certainly very lively, and very spirited, and very well educated, very well read.
Was your family very religious?
Would you just like to take a glass of water? The mouth is sounding.
Sorry.
Was yours a religious family, Ezra, or not? Yours a religious family, Ezra?
Not really. Judaism was always in the background. We were not kosher. My father observed the festivals and saw to it that we did, which is Passover, the New Year, the Day of Atonement, for the children also Purim, and the 15th of the month of Shvat, the festival of the first fruit, Tu B'Shvat, called in Hebrew. I have the impression that my mother was totally disinterested in things Jewish. It didn't interest her. My father was very much the reverse. He certainly was very Jewish in everything. It was his very being, without being in any way orthodox. In German terms or English terms today, I suppose you would call him a liberal Jew. He came from a very orthodox background. My grandfather, who came from Galicia and settled in Germany before the turn of the century, was certainly orthodox. He would not have been out of place in Stamford Hill. But my father did not keep that up. He was, like so many Jews, for some reason, which I do not know, apparently my grandfather insisted that his children be brought up as Germans in a German school. And my father had by virtue of this, had a very German upbringing. Obviously, at home, everything was Jewish, and he didn't go to school during the Jewish festivals. He had to say his prayers. He had an absolutely astonishing, above-average grounding in the Jewish religions, its accoutrements, its prayers, its rites, its services. He knew all that backwards. But he himself, to the outside world, could be very German, and you wouldn't even necessarily think that he was Jewish. After the war, here in England, when friends of mine from Germany, non-Jews, met him, more than one remarked to me how very German my father was. Now, this was not in the negative. He was not a very aggressive person, said not at all. And he wasn't in the least bit Teutonic, but his manner was that of a German. And he spoke German like a German, and his preferences were German preferences. He liked his glass of beer. He liked German food. That was my...
What do you remember about your holidays and your leisure activities as a child?
I don't remember many holidays. I don't think we had any in the later years when I would have remembered it, for the simple reason that we were not allowed to visit any holiday centres. In my part of the world, as it was then, the holiday resorts in the Bohemian Mountains on the German side were the first ones to bar Jews, even before it was decreed. They were bending over backwards to prove how good Nazis they were, that is, the administration. Pirna itself was a working-class town, and the people tended to be left-wing rather than right-wing. I understand that at some election the Nazis only got 32 votes in Pirna, whereas in nearby the middle-class suburbs and county towns, the percentage was very much high, up to 80% or more, for the Nazis. Figures exist about all this. It's all documented. I don't remember many holidays at all in Germany. In fact, I don't remember a single one, except that I would be at home, I wouldn't go to school, and I would go out and play in the meadow behind the house. And there was the hill behind the house with the meadow. That meadow led up to the castle, to the Pirna Festung, Sonnenstein, and I used to play on those slopes together with my pals, being chased off from time to time by the chap who rented the meadows to mow them later on for his creatures which he kept, goats I suppose, or sheep or something like that. And we had a running battle with him. He tried to chase us off, and of course we came back. Except when it came to haymaking, when we would help him with the haymaking. And later on, during the Christmas market, when there was a market on the marketplace in the town, where there were stalls set up for the occasion, when this chap who leased the meadow had a stall selling biscuits. And of course there were plenty of broken biscuits about, for many unpacked them from the boxes. And the kids who had helped him with the hay harvest would be given a bag of broken biscuits. So we were friends during that period. He wasn't really nasty. And never did I have any... I don't recall any anti-Semitic remark whatsoever from any of the older Pirna inhabitants except the schoolteachers. And not all of those either. I was told recently by a contact who is researching this, who lives in Pirna still, that the director of the school, who was the director of that school when I joined the school in 1935, he was so decent to me and so correct that I automatically assumed that he was certainly not a Nazi, possibly even an anti-Nazi. Now, this contact of mine tells me that he'd been a party member since 1928. So you didn't even... You see, you could still be a Nazi and a party member and still behave decently. It wasn't incumbent.
Can you tell me your first memory of Hitler or of hearing about Hitler?
Well, the first clear memory Hitler being talked about was at the time of the Anschluss, when Austria was incorporated into the Reich. There was a plebiscite on the question, and it voted in favor. And round about this time, Hitler sailed past Pirna. Well, this may have been later, after the annexation of Bohemia and Moravia, i.e. those parts of Czechoslovakia which he annexed immediately, that Hitler came through Pirna, actually, on a small river steamer, and he stood on deck. Of course, I didn't go anywhere near the place. So, well, you can work it out. The Austrian annexation was when, 38? 37? And then the annexation of Czechoslovakia, that was 38, and 39 was the war. Round about then.
Did your parents talk to you about what was happening around you?
Never. Never. It was never referred to when the children were around. Never.
Can you say something about that, about how your parents perhaps protected you from...
It simply wasn't discussed. It was never talked about. I now know, and I found this out only about 2 years ago when I visited a childhood pal who now lives in Frankfurt am Main, nearby, and I visited him. He had always been, as I call it, correct or decent. No anti-Semitic remarks, nothing. His father was a sort of Hans Sachs figure. He was a poet and the local cobbler. And I could always go and play in his shop in winter when it was too cold to be out in the road. And with other children, we were always welcome. There was never any... Absolutely, relationships were absolutely normal. And I only found out 2 years ago when I visited this cobbler's son, who was a pal of mine, he was older than me, a couple of years older, that my mother used to give him money regularly. Coins, you know, half a mark, 50 pfennige, which was quite a lot of money for a child before the war. In short, a spot of palm greasing. But of course I only found that out later. I'm not saying he would have behaved otherwise than the way he did if she had not given him money.
So when did you first become aware that perhaps things were changing, life was changing for you and your family?
It is very difficult to pinpoint. Because it happened, as I said, gradually. But one of the sharp, traumatic memory in my mind is, it must have been in February 1938. I can pinpoint it fairly precisely, because the carnival, Fastnacht, in Saxony is in February. I think it's the 14th of February. Not sure. And every year, the kids used to dress up. And I had a fancy dress suit, being what they in Germany call Trapper, Trapper und Indianer, trappers and Indians. In other words, cowboys, a cowboy suit, with the fringes down the trousers, to sort of loose blouse and a cowboy hat. And I used to dress up in that, and I look forward to it. And that year, my father strictly forbade me to dress up and to go anywhere near where the other children were playing or where they were, there was a gathering. With stalls and, you know, sort of, as you have in England, floats, stalls, and people gathered on the Sportplatz, the sports ground, for much merrymaking. And I was strictly forbidden from going anywhere near it by my father. And I disobeyed him. I went. My father found out, and he really slapped me. Now, that was such a rare thing to do for my father. It wasn't that it hurt so much. It didn't. But it was a very rare thing for him to lose his temper like that. And it has remained with me to this very day. Now, since by February 1938, we were still in Pirna, And I had to go, I think it was the dentist, or I had to go somewhere next day. Or perhaps I read it in the street, because newspapers used to be displayed in the street in showcases. And next to the house where I lived, there was one of these showcases with copies of Der Stürmer, which was the anti-Semitic paper dedicated specifically to vilify the Jews. It was hanging there on the wall. And I read it in passing. And it said something about the high point of the carnival celebrations in Dresden was a float called The Exodus of the Jews from Germany. And it showed figures, the usual, I suppose, the usual, I didn't see it, but I expect it showed the usual distorted figures with huge noses, thick glasses, beards, what have you name it, with bags of money or something like that. And that was the high point. And my father knew what probably this was going to happen. And that is why he didn't want me to go near the place. Not that I would have gone to what happened in Dresden, but he probably felt it was wrong for me, known as a Jewish child, to celebrate quasi, or Kesai Fastnacht, if this is how it's celebrated in nearby Dresden. Well, the Kristallnacht I remember rather more vividly. I remember details. I went to school that morning as usual. And the children, when they saw me come, the other kids, they avoided me. And they whispered among themselves and looked at me sort of, not meaningfully anything. I was just, that moment, as soon as I drew near, anyone who knew me, or the children, they all drew back. I was not ostracized, I was simply on my own. It wasn't nasty, but I was very much on my own. There was nobody who said a word to me. I would like to come back to an incident before. I was on my own then. And I went into the classroom, sat down at my seat. Again, nobody said anything. I didn't get hostile looks or anything. I was just not as if I were a leper or something. I was just left alone. Now, there were quite a number of children in the class who weren't allowed to speak to me anyway by their father, so in the beginning, I didn't notice anything particular once I was in the classroom. And when the teacher came in, he called me, and Jormann, we've always called by our surnames, and said, "It is better if you go home." And so I went. I packed my bag and went. We had these schoolboy satchels, so I packed that. And I walked home. And I had heard some whispers about the Jormann's Geschäft, the shop of the Jormanns, the Jormann shop. And as I drew near to this shop, I didn't think anything was untoward because it seemed quite normal. But when I drew closer, I saw the big holes in the windows where the shop windows had been smashed, and there was a small crowd of people standing in front of the shop. Quiet. No shouting, no slogans, nothing. They just stood there and watched. They made way for me. They recognized me. It's a very small town, but, well, the district where we live, the old town, is comparatively small, and we were known. You don't remain unknown if you have a shop in the high street or the marketplace. And so they made room for me. I walked through this crowd. I went into the shop, and there stood my father behind the door. And my mother was somewhere in the background. And opposite our shop, across the street, the Schossergasse, was another Jewish shop called Weiner. And that had also been smashed. And from time to time, my father would go out, leave the shops with a side door, and again, the people assembled there would make way for him, and he would walk across the road to the other shop, talk to Mr. Weiner, and come back again. My father got me out of the way very quickly by the simple expedient of giving me some money and said, go to the butcher next door. I was very fond, still am, of Frankfurter sausages. And so I gorged myself on Frankfurter sausages that morning. I knew something terrible was happening. Something momentous was happening. But I couldn't relate to it. I didn't know how to behave. I didn't know what to do. It threw me completely. So I thought the best thing to do was to keep out of the way. And since this was obviously what my father wanted me to do, I did precisely that. Now, from that moment on, my memory is a little hazy. I don't know. I must have gone back to the flat, although I doubt it, where we lived. I don't think I did. I think I went straight from the shop in the Weiner's car. They had a small car, a DKW. DKW. And we drove in the evening straight to their flat in Dresden, where they put me up. But there is an incident I would like to come back to before the Kristallnacht. It must have been the last Christmas that I spent in Pirna. Now, the Kristallnacht was 10th November 38. So it must have been Christmas 37 that the children, the school kids, were rehearsing for the Christmas play. I, of course, was never in it. But the whole class was called in to watch the dress rehearsal. Now, about a week or so before then, our mathematics teacher hadn't turned up. And so our form teacher decreed that we should have a Stunde Führerkunde, a lesson in knowing the Führer. And those who didn't want to hear about it, he said, who were not interested, should go home. Well, I didn't want to be the first one to leave, although I assumed that this was going to be an opportunity for a lot of anti-Jewish rhetoric. I waited until two other children packed their bags and made to leave, and a third one. After the first two, I also packed my bags, and then a fourth joined us. And we were sitting watching the rehearsal when this teacher came up to us, singled us out, who had left that day, and said, the traitors to the fatherland, come out. And we had to go back to the classroom and do sums, do a spot of arithmetic. So we were the traitors to the fatherland, in my case, at the tender age of 8. To that fatherland, it was quite a distinction.
Could you tell us a little bit about your father's arrest?
In the afternoon of, oh yes, yes. Before I went to Dresden that day, the Kristallnacht, yes, I think it was in the afternoon of that day, the police came, a policeman came to arrest my father. It was in the afternoon. He was taken away over to the police station, where one or two other people from Pirna, whom I knew, Jews, were, Mr. Nowak. Not Mr. Weiner. Mr. Weiner was not a German citizen, so he was not arrested. Only the German citizens were arrested. And my mother sent me over with some cigarettes for my father. And I saw my father sitting there quite composed in the police station. And this chap, the other man, Herr Nowak, whom we knew well, was a friend of my father, sitting next to him. And that is all I know. According to what my father told me later, the Nazis who demolished his shop were not local. They had to come from another town some 20 kilometers away because the local party refused to have anything to do with it. Our standing was fairly high, and I have articles today from the German press saying that my father always had an open hand for those who needed him, and he was quite prepared to let things go for nothing. I have proof of that, it so happens. or for very little or no profit in a case of need.
Could you tell us something about your discussions about whether you should leave Germany after...
About?
About thoughts of escape or of leaving Germany after the events of Kristallnacht, how that will
yes.
affect your family, your mother in particular.
Well, these discussions started from the Weiners, where I stayed for a week or so in Dresden. I moved in with my uncle, my mother's brother. Now, like Mr. Weiner, I don't know whether Mr. Weiner was a Polish citizen or what, I don't know. But my uncle certainly was. And so he wasn't touched at that point. At that point, they deported the Polish Jews. That came, I think it came at a later date, or perhaps it had already happened and he had come back. I'm not sure. But anyway, I moved in with my uncle. And by the time my father came back in February, or end of January, I think it must have been February, 1939, I never saw Pirna again at that point, and I stayed with my uncle.